I think the stream is up. We're going. It We're is. Good. We it are is. Back after an extended break.
Extended break. We didn't actually leave the studio, Rick.
Nope. We've been here all the time. There's a cot in the back that we just, you know, took a little bit of a nap on.
There's a cot?
There's a couple of cots. And you slept in the chair. I don't know why, but
you
we're
didn't
here.
Tell me.
We're here for another round of discussion and topics and discussion around Server 2012 R2 for the Jumpstart. Welcome back. If you're live and joining us, this is day two. If you're watching this in replay mode, you simply hit the next video, and now we're starting. My name is Rick Claus, Senior Technical Evangelist at Microsoft, joined once again.
I'm Corey Hines. I'm an architect for Hall Systems. I'm here to talk about Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2,
right.
Day two.
This particular session here is going to be about the management and automation of Server 2012. And 2012 R2, and some of the changes that we brought into the new environment for how that works. We've got a bunch of demos lined up for you as well. And, you know, there'll be some PowerShell, there'll be some command line, there'll be
It's management. Why would we do PowerShell?
Well, you know, it's one of those things you need to know. It's one of those things you need to spend time and do some investment in. Just a reminder, we do have a Q&A available on the side, and if you're live, you have a Q&A on the side. And I just ask you to be patient because we have a lot of people joining us online. And if we don't get to your question right away in the chat environment, or if we don't get to it online in the actual answers over the video stream, hang in there. We'll get to it. We'll do our best to make sure that you have your questions answered. But you know what, man? This is day two to start off for the way that we've organized this for management automation with Windows Server 2012 R2. We're also going to be covering some VDI stuff.
Absolutely.
Very interesting stuff coming up with VDI in the next section. And also some access information protection. I'll have my guest joining us. Not, you know, you'll be taking a brief departure. And then a guest, Adam Hall, will be joining us for that particular one.
Get out of the chair, bring in Adam.
You got it. And then coming back in to wrap it up with some web application. Now, as far as agenda and schedule goes today, we're going to try to keep these things to a relatively consistent length, but some have more content, some have less.
Yep.
So, you know, bear with us. We'll try to make sure that you have a chance to go and have a break, grab a bite to eat, or refill that pint or coffee or whatever
it is
that you're
Each enjoying. Of these sessions is somewhere in the order of, you know, 60 minutes to 75 minutes to, yep. to 90, somewhere in that kind of hour to hour and a half sort of window. And so we had some questions yesterday about, you know, how is the timing of the day look? You can kind of take it like that. We'll be doing the first two in the morning, the second two in the afternoon. And so for those of you that want to do time zone math, we're probably going to clue up in the vicinity of 4 o'clock, I think, around specific time here.
Yeah, so. If you're watching this live, that's where it happens to all come out in the mix. Resource-wise, you've seen this slide before if you've watched the other sessions. This is simply a link to be able to go off and to download the Windows Server 2012 R2 preview. Oh my goodness, I didn't update the link in this slide. It is aka.ms/ws2012r2. And download System Center 2012 R2 preview, which is aka.ms/sc2012r2.
And so we'll have that at the end of the session. And it's at the beginning and end of every single session except so this one.
So. I'll make sure that I update that one.
Absolutely.
Then. Automation, server management. It's a little thing you've been a little bit familiar with over the last little while.
I've been saying for years now. You know, if you're in IT and you're thinking about, okay, you know, what's my career path for IT?
Where should you invest?
Yeah, there's two things you should put time and energy into. One is PowerShell, and one is IPv6.
Yep.
Now we're not going to do much with IPv6. IPv6 is kind of there. A lot of things leverage it. There's no reason to turn it off, and it's one of those things I think people thought would become more adopted a little faster than it has been, but there's certainly a move towards IPv6. A lot of things in Windows use IPv6 in various ways, like direct access, for example.
Yep.
But PowerShell, if you don't know PowerShell, you're doing yourself a disservice. Mm-hmm. You need to take the time to learn PowerShell. And, you know, one of the things I found, because I taught scripting classes for a couple of years, I did some tech ed sessions back as far as, I think, 2006, where you know, take guys that you know are used to doing management via the UI, and try to teach them a little bit about writing code because, you know, PowerShell. There's so much you can do there. It could be as simple as you know running a command. If anyone that does IT, you're used to the idea of here's a new command line tool. Figure out the syntax and run it. And people are comfortable with that. And PowerShell, at its simplest level, can be just that. It's a command with a syntax you can kind of figure out and run. Mm-hmm. You can take it to the extreme and write entire user interfaces in PowerShell. You can do conditional logic in PowerShell. And the further you go into it and the more you learn how to do it, the better you're going to be able to automate and administer the data center. You know, to the point that if you go back, 10, 12 years ago, and I remember doing some training on Windows Server 2003. And with Windows Server 2003, they came out with, I forget what it was called right now, but there was like an add-on pack for 2003 that had these plethora of, I can't believe I used that word correctly,
nice.
Of command line tools. And so Microsoft's big claim at that point was, you know, you can do 98% of all server admin from a command line with these, you know, 300, 400, 500 different command line tools that, by the way, had different syntax and, you know, slash C, slash
S. It was a bit of a mess, I would say.
You know, my personal favorite, I remember, was iSCSI CLI.exe,
yeah.
Which required 15 perfectly spaced asterisks to get the command correct. the guy that wrote that was just, you know, he got stood up on a Friday night or something. He was in a bad mood. And then, you know, as PowerShell came along and went through its generations and iterations, the first versions of PowerShell, Exchange was actually the first product to really adopt it. And what you found with Exchange 2007, I think
2007.
It was, 2007, was, you know, they were the first big adopters of PowerShell. And what they said was, you can do, you know, 80% of our server administration from the UI.
Mm-hmm.
And they took all those little one-off things. They built a more focused UI that was on the day-to-day stuff that administrators did more often than anything else. And all the one-off stuff that you would only do as advanced troubleshooting or special configurations was only PowerShell. And that's become the norm right now. All the products like, Server Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, you know, all these different products, they're just big PowerShell wizards.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them even show you the PowerShell. Like, for example, VMM was an Exchange have been famous for doing this. At the end of running a wizard, click a button, there's the PowerShell.
Yeah. You
Active
can
Directory do this.
Active Directory uses in computers.
No.
Replacement, which is administrative sensor.
I cut you off before you finished your sentence, didn't I?
it also shows you the PowerShell.
Yeah, so Active Directory Admin Center. And most people don't even know this,
yeah.
Right? Actually, let me show you that real quick, because that's a really cool kind
of... You're jumping into a... We haven't even gotten off the first couple of slides.
I know, I'm excited, dude. Have a look
You're
down
setting
here.
A trend for today, I guess.
Haven't looked down here for a second.
Well, you know what? There's, I will make a comment. I was hoping to get the link, but I don't have the link just yet. But we are having a special one-dayer PowerShell jumpstart on the 18th of July with Jeffrey Snover. And I just put Matt on the spot as a producer behind the cameras because I asked him for the link and he hasn't given it to me yet. Matt. we'll give you guys the link in case you haven't a chance to see it, and it'll be available if you're watching this on replay. You'll be able to see that one there on replay as well.
So have a look down here for one sec. So this is Active Directory Admin Center, and just kind of showing the point of how prolific PowerShell is. And most people kind of miss this entirely, but if I go in here just to make a new OU, something real simple. Actually, before I do that, right on the bottom, look at this Windows PowerShell history right here. And if we bring that up, and then we do something like make a new organizational unit.
Quick little form, input. Nice little thing. In case you haven't seen this before, this is the new desired way of being able to manage and administer users and computers.
Exactly. You know, actually, user computers is still there and works, but there's no new functionality.
Right.
There's nothing new going to be added. All the new stuff around claims authentication, around dynamic access control, is all in this new tools. Hit OK on that. And look on the bottom, it generates the PowerShell for you. That's how prolific PowerShell is. And so, you know, as part of this module, and Rick will go through the outline of the module in a second, you've got to walk away from this thinking, you know, I got to go learn PowerShell if you don't already. It's the way of the future. So
the link to that particular jumpstart, in case you're interested, is microsoftvirtualacademy.com/live-events/PowerShell-jumpstart. So on July 18th, if you're already past July 18th, you'll be able to catch that one on replay. Some good stuff is going to be in there with Mr. Snover and others. But you mentioned the format for this particular session. If you take a look at the agenda over here, we've got basically some discussion around standards-based management. We aren't doing this in a vacuum. We're working with other people to be able to come up with a standardized way of being able to manage Windows devices and non-Windows devices from Windows devices and from non-Windows devices as well.
So anything from anything.
Anything from anything is where we're trying to go to make this easier. Simplifying your routine tasks day to day. Talk about some deployment methodology for being able to get Windows Server as a platform out inside your environment. Then also doing some multi-server management with some server manager stuff and some other things. And then also some ecosystem and extensibility things.
Absolutely.
Great stuff is coming in. Now, we've broken this down into basically five categories. With first of all, it's just a brief background on standards-based stuff, then also simplifying your tasks and the rest of them. So jumping right into that very first one with standards-based management. Basically, we were introducing the concept of the Windows Management Framework, or WMF 3.0 is what it was in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't check to see if they've upped the number to 4.0 in 2012 R2, so I actually have to do a little bit of homework while you're doing the demo.
I don't know that.
But we came up with this mainly because, as you can see here as an example, based on the role of the thing that you currently are employed as doing, so if I'm an IT pro, if I'm a developer, if I'm a solution provider, if I'm someone that's making code to be able to go off and to manage multiple systems, you had a exponentially growing number of ways and methodologies you could go through and manage different types of operating systems, different types of pieces of the operating system, like the storage environment, the storage subsystem, disks, devices, and managed objects, that sort of stuff. And it was basically kind of a mess to be able to go.
Well, I mean, you know, as a practical example, and I mean, if folks will be able to relate to this, even with our own data centers, we've got like a 4-page document of all the different management endpoints for switches and routers and firewall devices, and every one of them are different. Every one of them are slightly different nomenclature, and you know, the way that you do a VLAN on the Brocade switch is a bit different than you would do it on the HP switch or the Cisco switch. All the same conceptually. But you can't assume that because you've done one, you can just go immediately do the other.
So you've got this all gathered together in a nice red book binder that you then go and share off with all the individual people.
Yeah, and I mean, every time you make a change, you've got to fix the book. And it's a pain, to be quite honest.
So the idea with this is with the Windows Management Framework, basically, it gives you the ability to have one set of a infrastructure that you basically would be able to work with and or code to and understand how that works. And it's the one that goes off and does the talking down to the individual disk storage and operating systems and stuff like that.
Yeah, and this, you know,
it's
all
a standards-based way.
Basically. Exactly. And all these frameworks, in a lot of cases, are based on sort of the lowest common denominator of functionality, right? A lot of cases, you know, you'll get a hardware product and it will expose, you know, all of the standards plus a bunch of proprietary stuff. And that's going to be typical and it's always going to be the case. But, you know, if you look at, you know, what do you do 80% of the time when you manage hardware, in the case of switches, it's usually VLANing and port control.
Yep.
It's pretty standard stuff. Sure, there might be, you know, a custom uplink port for that vendor that you got to do a little bit differently.
But the good part is that this opportunity gives that vendor the ability to go off and to expose that if they want to.
Absolutely.
As long as they adhere to the base level, they can then go and show their value add for why you would use that particular switch
It's not a structured set of commands. It's a framework that they can adhere to, which makes it discoverable like everything else.
So, you know, we got standard APIs you basically can go off and use. Windows PowerShell is the one that we're going to be talking about the most today for this particular session here. But then also you have, obviously, some other stuff on the other people's platforms known as the open data protocols. And then the way that you're going to be talking to those different types of devices is through WSMAN or through REST calls or through HTTP requests or, you know, you name the way that that it goes off and talks to it. And then the different types of models, the SIM model being the common information model is the most common. And then down to specific stuff. For instance, storage has its own set of standards that it uses, and these are the industry standard ones that people go off and use. So the approach that we have for 2012 R2 from a preview perspective is, again, you've got WSMAN is available. It's available by default on the different systems, and you're going to be basically attacking and using this in a standardized format through PowerShell, through whatever different types of management capabilities that you have. That's going to be going down through the OData service, being able to go off and to talk to various different components if it needs to, down into PowerShell to go off to different modules, and then off to go off and talk to the different servers and services.
Yeah, the management OData service is just a component of Windows that can accept management commands from non-Windows type devices.
Mm-hmm. The Open Management Infrastructure, it's a WMI provider, API with extended PowerShell semantics and support, allows you to go off and to basically have full implementations of WSMAN, and they exist both on Windows and also WSMAN is available on other operating systems as well, on the Linux side of things and on the Unix side of things. For instance, the Arista switch that we were talking about the other day, they're not running Windows on that. They're running more than likely some kind of a customized version of a small Linux derivative.
It's a Linux kernel.
Yeah, that's inside there, and it's being used and managed through PowerShell.
And it's important to note that WSMAN is not Windows Server Management, it's web services management.
Right.
So it's management over HTTP, which all traces its roots back to things like web-based enterprise management, which has been baked into Windows for a long time, just improving. And this is the stuff that WMI is all based on as well.
Right. So the One Management Infrastructure, it's an open source Windows management infrastructure that's been implemented by Microsoft. It includes Windows Server Management and the protocol stack, and it allows you to go off and to manage a variety of different devices. The one note that I have in here, as I said at the very beginning, is that basically, you know, if you kind of sum this up nice and easy, it's a way that you can go off and manage non-Windows devices from a Windows device, mm-hmm. or you can go off and manage Windows devices from a non-Windows device. They just simply are able to go back and to talk back and forth to each other as possible. The approach that we're going with is that we're trying to go in and to use PowerShell as a way that we can go off and have the ability to fire those guys off inside native code as different providers to go off and talk to different services. We're using SMIS to be able to manage external storage arrays. The idea that we were talking about yesterday in the storage side of things is that you don't have to go off and to learn all these different management interfaces to go off and interface with the storage, provided they're SMIS compliant. And it's an industry standard version of SMIS that we're a contributing member towards mm-hmm. that makes it so that you know, all the different vendors are playing into using this and they're starting to support this as well.
Yeah, it's if you're shopping, for example, for new storage arrays, like you're building you're building a new storage implementation, whether it's the cluster in a box we talked about yesterday, whether it's traditional fiber channel or SKSE SAN storage, if you want to plug into this framework, you just want to check with the vendor that's providing you the hardware and see what are these standards it actually complies to, and also in many cases what level they comply to, mm-hmm. because different standards might have a level one or a full or a partial implementation, and so in a lot of cases you might get we're SMIS compliant, but only by that much.
Yeah.
So they can sometimes they do that to be able to just check the box and get past the initial requirements. So you want to look into it just a little bit beyond the surface to make sure that although it's compliant with the protocol, it actually implements all the functions you might potentially want to do.
Yep. To take that into the next level, switch management as an example for being able to show how this works. An example of that we talked about yesterday, both on the storage side, but then also on the networking side of things, with the ability to go off into mesh and to control both the virtual networks through software-defined networking, as well as the physical networks as well, by being able to manage them. A series of PowerShell scripts for common management tasks. SCVMM, as an example, will be able to go in and validate the different configurations of the switches and how they're configured, bring that into your catalog of fabric management within SCVMM. It then is able to go in and define ways you can go and auto-generate commands to be able to go out and configure things. It does it for you in the background. You had a bit of a demo earlier the other day. Why don't you see if you can go in and pull that guy back?
Yeah, let's go take a look at that real quick. And there's a few things we're going to kind of briefly take a glance at here. Have a look down on my screen for a second, guys. So I'm going to do kind of two things here. First, VMM, right? So Virtual Machine Manager, there's a jump start next week on Virtual Machine Manager, which will come out over time. So we're not going deep into Virtual Machine Manager here, but kind of positioning this as a fabric management tool for the data center. So as you're building out these infrastructures that consist of switching fabric, of storage fabric, and of server fabric, VMM is not just for virtual machines anymore, it's for managing the hardware that powers and drives all that infrastructure as well. Mm-hmm. And so within VMM, you now have things like switches that you can configure. You now have things like port profiles, which control traffic on switches. You have the ability to add storage arrays. And these storage arrays can be traditional SAN, or they can be the newer generation scale-out file server storage. Mm-hmm. That is the opportunity to simplify some of those implementations on the back end. You can manage file servers as storage endpoints. And then also manage fiber channel. Mm-hmm. And through some of these protocol standards we're talking about, right? So this is what makes that possible. VMM doesn't know how to talk to every vendor out there, but it knows how to talk the standard protocols. One of the things that we have within VMM is this notion of a network service. A network service can be a top-of-rack switch, for example.
Right.
So when we talk about being able to manage switches using things like OMI, this is how this winds up being bubbled up to an administrator, so the administrator has tools to work with. You wouldn't generally sit down in PowerShell and do stuff necessarily, but you have the opportunity to build UIs on top of that, and VMM is already doing some of that. So just to kind of give it a little bit of context. Now, what that looks like, just from a, we kind of go sort of super geeky here for a second. This is This is intimidating PowerShell. So if you're new to PowerShell, not all PowerShell looks like this. We'll show you some really simple.
We'll build up the complexity in the section specifically talking about PowerShell. Yeah,
we're going to start with terrifying and work our way to simple. How about that?
We'll go backwards.
So this what I've got here is essentially a little switch emulator for an Arista switch, which is basically a little Linux based thing. But it's they provide an emulator so that you can test and dev against it, essentially. So you don't need to necessarily buy the hardware. So what I've done is I've done an authentication using this common information model session against the switch, and I've already done that a little bit and just put in a credential. But what I can now do is I can actually query this switch for little bits of information about it. So this is, you know, again, fairly simple stuff. But as you can see, I can pull out the model number and the manufacturer of the switch.
Yeah, possibly firmware revisions and
Things like that. Here's, for example, ports and VLANs that are available on the switch. And if I just put those as a table, it actually looks a little better. So there's ports and there's VLANs.
Nice.
Right? And then we can perform tasks like, as an example, creating a VLAN. So I've got a little bit of, like I said, this is an intimidating PowerShell.
But it's five lines of code that's going to actually make three different VLANs on this particular switch.
On the switch. So we're just going to run that little bit there, and we're going to come back up here and query our VLANs again, which is this line right here. And so now we've got additional VLANs.
Yep.
Right. So ordinarily, you would have had to go into the switch's web UI, or telnet into it, or plug the serial cable in and go in and do whatever format and syntax the switch did. And do it there. And if you've got an Arista switch and an HP switch and a Dell switch and a Cisco switch,
each may be just
a little bit different, so that it's not, you can't necessarily script against it.
And so now with an OMI model, being able to go in and now have this done through a PowerShell, you have one consistent interface to be able to go off and manage it.
Right.
Also able to be automated, and also able to potentially be incorporated into the piece that you showed us at the very beginning, which was SCVMM for System Center Virtual Machine Manager to do your fabric management of your switches.
Yeah, so as you go in and do things in VMM, like request network virtualization scenarios or software-defined networking, what VMM turns around behind the scenes and does is this.
Right.
If you're... you want to impress your friends, and you can go do it in PowerShell. And, you'll be the life of the party, trust me. So there you go. That's kind of a little quick, and I've got some samples here that are, they scare me, put it that way. So there's some interesting things, setting VLANs, changing VLANs. We just got some sample stuff here. There you go. That's switch management via OMI, via PowerShell, that eventually turns up as buttons in things like VMM.
Now, we're getting questions asking about access to the particular thing that you just went through, and we covered that the other day.
Yeah.
These were currently small sample labs. They were part of
TechEd
attendees. We'd be able to had access to be able to use these. At this point in time, they're not available unless you attend a TechEd.
Yeah,
but there's probably plans to be able to make them available.
Well, there is. I know that for a fact, that by the time you watch this video, you'll probably be able to go on TechNet VLabs and do this. Because I'm working on building them when I'm not here.
Oh, nice.
So there you go. That's next week's
that's
project.
That's what you do after hours.
Yeah, that's next week's project, is to get all that bubbled into a larger R2 sort of scenario environment that people can play with.
So stay tuned for that if you're asking that particular question that's up in there. Actually, you had a couple of people asking. I'll try my best to make sure that when you switch over to your demo environment, I kind of clarify what it is. We had some comments in the queue the other day, what tools are you using and which machines are you talking to?
Yeah, so
I'll slow you down for
it. All right, so it's, absolutely. So, okay.
No worries. Out-of-band hardware management with standards-based automation. Talk to me a little bit about this, the concept of being able to go through and if they don't support these different ways of being able to manage them. How are you able to go off and to go out and manage these guys through PowerShell?
So much like with the switch, switches have OMI. Mm-hmm. Servers have either SMIS or SMIS. They have IPMI or they have SMASH. And these are the two protocols that things like, for those that have Dell or HP servers, that iDRAC and ILO are based on. So you plug in the extra port on the server, you can console over it, you can reboot the server, power on the server, you can check the status of things depending on what they choose to expose. And in many cases, you have the basic functionality, or you can upgrade the license to the advanced. A lot of our servers use iDRAC Enterprise from Dell, so we can actually do remote console and stuff like this. But it's all you use Dell stuff.
So it's the interface to be able to go off and to remotely turn on these systems in an automated fashion,
right,
without having to use the web interface or ping it with a customized console.
Exactly right. And that sort of thing as well, if you guys want to look on my screen for just a second, is bubbled up via VMM as well. So within Virtual Machine Manager, you have the ability on a physical host. So I'm just going to look at one of my physical hosts here and just look at the hardware properties. You can configure under hardware, something called the BMC settings.
Mm-hmm.
The BMC settings allow you to put in the IP address. So for example, you know, here are the two protocols we mentioned, but let's say that I have a server that's using Dell iDRAC. I put in the iDRAC port number,
yep,
and I put in the credential that's used to access it. And now VMM can do things like reboot the server, power it on, power it off. The functionality is you know, it wouldn't be what you would get in the entire management interface from the vendor, but it's enough to do centralized management of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, that if the server reboots and it hangs or something, you can send it a reboot command. You don't got to
log that, in. That cluster in the box we were using yesterday has got BMC console built into it,
right,
and it's got, as long as that network port's plugged in, you know the IP address of it, you know how to authenticate to it, you can basically expose that in here and be able to remote control that guy from the level of being able to turn them on, turn them off, and other management stuff.
Exactly right.
Very,
so,
very cool stuff.
As an example of that in PowerShell, have a look down here for a second. This is what some of that stuff looks like in PowerShell. And again, mm-hmm, I've got a little emulator application here that I'm just going to fire up. So this is just, it's a little IPMI server emulator. So at that point, we'll authenticate to it. And password, this one's Bulldog1.
Nice.
Right. And so this emulates essentially a Dell server.
Yep.
And so we can now start doing...
Oh, yeah. Defining some BMC stuff there.
Look at some of the properties of it.
Yep.
Right. So this might give me, you know, make, model, manufacturer, part numbers, and then, you know, do some other sort of interesting things here. That one
go for bad password.
Let's try that one more time. There we go. Again, so just different ways you can actually connect, query different information.
Mm-hmm.
Here's, for example, the boot string. So we can go in and actually change, for example, change the boot device on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is how things like VMM would actually, let me just show the boot string again. So you can see I should have made a change. It didn't look like it made the change, but and I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah.
So this is how things like VMM, for example, would do a hardware-based deployment.
Mm-hmm.
With VMM, you can roll in a rack of servers, plug in the management ports, it'll go scan the network and find them, log on to them, tell it to Pixie boot for one time only, boot them, deploy WinPE, deploy the operating system, install Hyper-V, configure it as a cluster, connect it to your storage, VLAN it, do the whole bit.
Yep.
Using these standard protocols.
Nice.
And so you can do a lot of this, you know, through PowerShell, as you can see right here. Things like stop the device or start the device, which is like a power off.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these are exposed as standard commands that are vendor agnostic, that it doesn't matter if it's Dell or HP or IBM, or Cisco or whatever, the one script can work across all of them, which is the goal here. It's, you know, one unified management tool, do anything at all.
Okay, so over here in the slides, just to kind of keep this thing moving along, we've been talking about the elephant in the room, which is PowerShell. Everything you've been showing us basically has been about PowerShell, but the idea behind this is one way to go off to simplify your routine tasks is obviously going off and using things like PowerShell or using consoles that are powered in by PowerShell on the back end, like System Center Virtual Machine Manager, to go off and to get that particular process done. PowerShell's been upgraded and done into a version 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it looks and feels, in case anyone's wondering, that, you know, the console colors have not changed. The font has not changed.
But you can
capabilities,
change it.
But you can change it if you want to. There are some, you know, as far as changes that have occurred, more commandlets, more functions, more features and stuff you can control with it. We've upped it, as you'll see in a couple of slides here, we've upped it from 2,300 commandlets, which was in 2012, up to over 3,000 now for 2012 R2. And some of the tools you're going to be using to interface and work with this, as you've been seeing with Corey, he's been doing both the command line, but also the use of the ISE, the Integrated Scripting Environment. And that, for me, that was a huge change for me, because I love the Integrated Scripting Environment.
Well,
and it's just gotten better each time.
Yeah, what they've done is tried to find every excuse you've ever had for not learning PowerShell and squash it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but this is hard. Okay, we made it easy. Oh, but this is, we made it easy. So you're running out of excuses.
Yeah, so you can use it to learn about it as far as what the commands are, what the syntax is. You use it to have it do auto-completes of your commands, auto-tab completes of different functionality that you're looking for. You don't know the correct syntax for the different parameters you have to throw to it. To be able to quickly look through and parse through scripts, you've been using the ISE a lot for the demos,
yeah.
For what it is. Why don't you give us a quick little 10-cent tour of the
ISE
there for
everybody. Jump in, take a look here. This is PowerShell ISE.
Now,
and
first thing I'll call out that's very helpful in this kind of environment that you may not have noticed is that little zoom function in the bottom right-hand corner. Just for large and small monitors, to be able to make it so you can make it larger and smaller to suit your needs. We'll try to make it so that you guys can see better on the screen when we're working with it, although you obviously lose some resolution on it. And the right-hand side is the commands that you can go off and take a look at.
Yeah, so those are actually interesting. We'll pop to those in just a second, but let me kind of show you a couple of quick things in here. We're just going to do a get service. So first of all, you notice it does IntelliSense. Complete with syntax.
Right, that's not new. That was there before.
That was there before.
Very helpful.
Well, when we think about what's new here, think about more of what's gone from 2008 to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
What they've added from 2012 to R2 is a new set of functions called desired state configuration.
Right.
The experience using PowerShell is still the same. So for a lot of people that haven't gone in here and played with this in 2012, some of this stuff is pretty neat and significant. So, for example, get service, but they've extended tab completion to parameters as well.
Yeah.
So get service app info, and I can actually do it down here. I won't do it up here because I keep pressing execute, but let's do it, get service, and we just get some information on a service.
Yeah.
And like if we take all our services, one of the cool things one of the things that quite frankly made PowerShell intimidating for a lot of people learning for the first time is all the squiggly brackets and parentheses. And
yep.
When do I squiggly one versus a round one versus a square one? And you know, that's where guys that, you know, aren't that familiar with code structures and things like that, they start downloading samples off the web and they look at it and they go, hell with that, I'm not, you know, it looks too hard, and they try to, and they break it, and much too easy they've made this. So if I want all running services, in the past I'd do something like this. I'd do a where, and I'd do dollar underscore, all the autocomplete, the status,
yep.
And I do my equals.
Equals.
Yep. And this is all fine and good, and all those little brackety things is where, you know, people kind of, let me shrink that a little tiny bit, you know, had a little bit of trouble. Look how easy they've made this now, because they've taken all those things
that was the old way.
Yeah, that people found confusing, like brackets, and they said, well, you don't need those anymore. So we get rid of those. All these little quotes right here, you don't need those, and this dollar sign underscore stuff, we don't need those, and now it can be that simple.
Nice.
Right? So all the stuff that, you know, people found hard, it's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. If you're doing PowerShell from just a straight PowerShell prompt, one of the best commands you can use is something called show command. Show command basically brings up a PowerShell wizard for you. So you want to type a command line tool, but you don't want to actually figure out the syntax, you can come in here and build your command line tool graphically. Now, there's the definition of irony as far as I'm concerned. So I want to look at processes. So I can do a get, and I just type process. And it goes, okay, here's all the stuff about process. Do a get process, double click it. And now I have all the parameters and all the variations just as something else. Do a process for PowerShell. Now I can just run it. That obviously wasn't a process. It was a get process. Process name. Okay, yeah, let's do iExplore. So we'll do a show command. Show command get process. Name. Run or copy.
Nice.
And there you go. But again, just making it easy, removing the blockers.
Now, we've already had about 5 questions talking about, are you going to be showing and talking about desired state configuration?
Yes.
And I just want people to know that, yes, we will be showing it in more detail a little bit later on. We still are building up the fundamentals for being able to get to that
point. So desired state configuration is in there. I've got a little demo on it to kind of explain the concept of what it is and show you sort of how it works and go from there.
So we're definitely getting there. Definitely getting there.
But those are some examples. And, you know, Rick mentioned, number of commandlets that are available. Just to kind of give you some scope on that, if we just do a git command and we put that in a grid view, this basically dumps every single command that you have to give you some sense of just how many of these things there are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's massive. If we get time towards the end, we can do some samples of what some of the cooler commands are. But things you can do now in PowerShell that you previously were difficult are things like setting IP addresses. And this is not R2. This is just PowerShell for 2012 in general, 3 and 4. And if you're coming from a Windows Server 2008 R2 environment, if you want to set an IP address, you had to do a NetShell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it's a text-based, not an object-based syntax. You can enable, disable network adapters. You can set firewall rules. You can configure disks. You can create partitions and volumes. You can create user accounts. You name it, you can do it in PowerShell.
Yep.
And as we said yesterday, pick a question, answer with PowerShell.
Now, you great little miniature tour so far of ISE. Something that's new in there, something I wanted to ask you to call out, is this whole concept of, from ease of use perspective, simplified scripting. You showed us the ability to remove the syntaxes that were a bit daunting for some people. But there's also the ability to go off and they do some stuff with code snippets and things.
Yeah, so built into PowerShell, we've got this thing called snippets. If we go start snippets, what it does is it goes, well, here's some of the most common structures that you might want to build in PowerShell. Now, granted, this is a little more advanced. This is going beyond, run a command to create a script.
Right.
But you want to do, for example, a simple loop, a do while loop. Double-click it, and you've got a structure in place that you can now base this on.
Put the stuff in the middle.
Yeah, for those of you that are trying to learn PowerShell, it's a great way to go, I know I want to do a do while, but I'm not entirely sure how to properly structure it. The snippets show you. And the snippets are extensible, and you can download new ones, and there's community ones. There's all kinds of stuff you can do there.
Now, there's already been a couple of questions on there asking about this thing that they've heard of before, which is the code repository. It's the scripting center. I don't know if we have internet access to be able to show it on this particular machine. Testing you right now to see if you have visibility into knowing what that URL is.
I do know it, and every URL on the planet is.
There you go, because you're using Bing.
Every URL on the planet. There you go, Rick. Got another one? Come
Perfect.
On. You can do better than that. Challenge me, Rick.
The Script Center is definitely a great area to go off and to learn more about stuff. Scripting guys with Ed and the other people in the community and the MVPs that go and contribute to this area.
This is the largest community there is, the PowerShell community.
Yep.
And it doesn't
They can be a little bit fanatical, too, though.
They're very fanatical. And they can be, if you're new to the PowerShell community and some guy comes in and goes, you could have really done that with four less characters on two less lines, just whatever.
Smile and nod.
Smile and nod and go, yes, I probably could have. They can be a little bit, almost religious about it.
Yep. So you mentioned an example of the extensive of the improvements of the area of PowerShell from it's more of a monumental step from 2008 R2 than 2012.
Yeah.
It's incremental from 2012
it
to
sure
2012
is.
R2. Some basic stats in case you're interested. Instead of 2,300 commandlets, we're now over 3,000 commandlets. Over 100 new modules have been added into the environment. A lot of those new modules allow the use of PowerShell to be able to go off and to manage all sorts of different apps aspects of the data center. We'll talk about some of these coming up in just a little bit and how we can use them and how you work with them. But basically, it's been improved upon. We're continuing to make that investment. And to the point where, something as minor or as major, actually, in my opinion, in the Windows 8.1 client, you actually can choose in the settings to be able to switch your default command prompt to PowerShell prompt with a simple checkbox. And on server, they don't even have a list of what the cmd.exe file is on the start environment. It just has PowerShell.
And PowerShell
can still run cmd.exe if you need to.
Yep.
But you have to start it from PowerShell.
Yeah, but because there are times you would want to do that. I forget what I was going to say. I was going to say something, but I forget. So continue on.
Got it. A greater resiliency. Now, you showed us a bit of this the other day, the ability to go through and to use PowerShell Web Access. PowerShell Web Access was first introduced in 2012. It's there again and still there and been improved upon in 2012 R2 for what you can do. And, you know, I want to at least once again reiterate the fact that this is all set up in such a way that it adheres to all the same security levels mm-hmm. and policies and procedures for what boxes you can talk to, which ones you can talk to remotely. It requires authentication. Yeah. It's available through HTTPS. And, you know, think of it like, as I like to call it, the OWA of the PowerShell prompt.
That's a good analogy. I haven't used that one before.
Right.
It's PowerShell
OWA. It's taken
OWA.
Forever for the security guys to be concerned about having the OWA prompt to be able to get people to go off and have access to their mail through the web.
It's the same.
Now it's standard.
Yeah.
And then now you got the OWA PowerShell prompt.
Absolutely. So, you know, and it's a heck of a lot more secure than an old Telnet session was,
yes.
I promise you.
Oh, yeah,
so,
definitely.
Take a look down again. Here for 1 second. And I did think of the thing that I was going to say, which is modules. Right? You mentioned over 100 modules. With 2008, you had to load a module. So if you wanted a command, you had to figure out the module, load the module. With 2012 and 2012 R2, they load automatically.
Yes. Right.
Which has a little interesting side effect. When you launch PowerShell for the very first time and you start typing a command, the performance kind of slows to a crawl for a few seconds. You kind of go, "What? Why is it hanging? It's taken forever." It's compiling and loading all the modules in the background on the fly. As soon as you start git dash, it goes, "I got to find every command that's on the machine," and loads all the modules.
Mm-hmm.
So just, you know, be aware of that. That when you first start typing a PowerShell command, if you're quick, the IntelliSense mightn't catch up.
Yep.
It might be sluggish or choppy because all the modules run in the background. But once that happens, it's like that.
Right.
So what I've got here is PowerShell Web Access. This was introduced in 2012. It's gotten a little better in R2, and I'll show you what's different and cool. But basically, what this essentially allows you to do is put a PowerShell command prompt in a web browser over SSL.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of interesting implications for this, opportunities for folks to build solutions around it. You know, someone once referred to 443 as the Universal Firewall Traversal Protocol, because you may have enclaves within the network, places where you don't have the right level of protocol access to do PowerShell remoting. This gives you a method to essentially proxy PowerShell into those areas of the network. And to install it, it's a role you add through Server Manager. Once it's installed, and I've got it installed on my domain controller here, which is not the recommended place to do it, but nonetheless, got a series of commands that relate to PowerShell Web Access. Those particular commands, let me just blow this up a little tiny bit. There we go. Those commands for PowerShell Web Access. Once you install it, the first command you run is install the web application. I'm using a test certificate as opposed to a real one, so it gives you a certificate prompt when you first connect, and that's fine. We're just doing it as a demo. Then you create an authorization rule. An authorization rule, and this is how you control permissions, basically allows you to say which users are allowed to go to which computers, which groups are allowed to go to which computers. So, for example, as an administrator, you may be able to use PowerShell Web Access, but you can only go to 3 different servers. You can't go to a domain controller. And these PowerShell Web Access authorization rules are how you govern that. So for those of you guys that are considering and thinking about security, this is basically where that kind of factors into play. So once that's all set up, you navigate to the PowerShell Web Access site. This is what you get. Go ahead and log on. A hard morning for typing around.
I know. It's only one coffee in, that's why.
And so we're just going to hit the machine called VMM. And you can get a little more specific with configuration names, whether you're using SSL or not, port numbers, protocol names. And so we're just going to leave all the defaults for now. And you can see here that I've already got a session that I've left running. And this was actually from yesterday.
Yeah.
It's caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting this, but it's still there. So this is now the demo.
Yeah, and that's actually different from the way it was in 2012. 2012 used to time out after 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Minutes
so, yeah,
like
so 2012, when you disconnect, your session's gone.
Right.
With 2012 R2, you can preserve the session. What I'm going to do is just say new session, because I want to show how you do this. So if I
that just flushed all your variables and everything else.
Yeah, so this is a new session. There's nothing, that variable has nothing. Put a value in there. We can see that has a value. And now we're just going to save the session as opposed to exit the session. We'll go log back in. And we can see that I've got this new session that was created today. Now, it's got a, I didn't name the session when I logged on, so I've kind of got to look at the time on it. We click that one, and we can see that my variable is still there from yesterday. Let's go grab the one I had today. All right, here's the one from today. There we go. And so the point with all this is I have a PowerShell session running on a server. For some reason, I'm disconnected. It's able to save the session, keep it there, so I can now reconnect later. And when you start looking at using PowerShell in WAN administration scenarios, where the network may not be as trustworthy, this functionality becomes very important. Mm-hmm. And there's opportunities to build administration tools and management tools that leverage this PSWA interface point with the ability to, you know, go in, do a bunch of configuration, disconnect, and then come back and check it later, mm-hmm. or tolerate the fact that, oh, the wireless went down for a second, or, you know, whatever might happen. So this is kind of new and cool.
Now, one of the things that's there is also the ability to have jobs scheduled and jobs rescheduled and
yes.
have sessions-based stuff. That's a definite improvement upon how you're going to be going in and doing
right.
states and reconnecting into those states and being able to go off and manage them.
Right.
Now they're able to be triggered off to be on a scheduled basis, and they can do it startup, at log on, and other ones.
Like you're that. Having fun with this. You're just going, I'm picking a topic, show it.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. See if you can keep up with it. Can you keep up with that?
I'll do my best. I'll do my best. Look down here for a second. I can't really do a job for you.
Yeah, it's
but,
all right.
You can see that there's a bunch of commands here around
scheduling
jobs, right? So we have the ability to create a scheduled job. So this PS scheduled job module. So we'll just look at that module. And for example, which is set, create, new scheduled job. Yeah, one of those in there. So you can create a job, and then you can have what's called a job trigger.
Yeah.
And job triggers are things like based on time of day, based on conditions, yeah. event log entries.
Like daily at 4 a.m. or
exactly.
something like that if you wanted to.
Exactly. So you can write an entire PowerShell script, create that as a job, and then put a trigger on it, say, whenever you get this event ID that runs,
yep.
run the job. And you might go, well, this is some of the functionality that was in, you know, task scheduler. And it is, but it's now in PowerShell. You couldn't automate task scheduler.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to do it. I've tried. Now you can create these automation frameworks with PowerShell, and it's
right.
all just built in there.
Now, going again, this is just to touch on this. You don't necessarily have to show this one here, but basically, with this ability to have different sessions and the ability to have job triggers and jobs and scheduled jobs and longer running scripts because you get session states that can be disconnected and reconnected mm-hmm. again, you obviously have the ability to go into that next level. This is getting far beyond my capabilities in PowerShell by going into workflow.
Yeah, workflow.
Workflow really is just a matter of going in and using all these different pieces together and having conditions on which areas it's going to go in and manage.
Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of different constructs within PowerShell. There's workflows, there's functions
mm-hmm.
That you can create that all have slightly different purposes. And a workflow is an example of one of those where you can create a workflow and then schedule it with a trigger. So it's almost like a mini script within PowerShell. And they can be complex, they can be simple, they can be, you know, do something like do a domain join, they can be something like run a, you know, a 40-page configuration script.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could be things like apply a desired state configuration, which we'll get to that
yep.
in a little bit, and you start to see how all these different building blocks come together.
So one of the data center options and solutions for managing this environment is going to be going through with Orchestrator. Orchestrator... PowerShell automation.
Part of system center.
You know, do you need Orchestrator? Do you still use Orchestrator? How is it different than doing all sort of stuff in PowerShell?
PowerShell is not going to let you sit in a graphical environment, draw arrows and boxes to describe how you want the complex workflow to go.
Right.
It also, you know, if you're looking at, I want to write a workflow that deploys a VM with Virtual Machine Manager, sets an alert in Operations Manager, and bubbles up something into Service Manager. That's a lot of PowerShell you would have to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that would take a lot of time to build, dev, and test. What Orchestrator does is let you draw that in the same way you draw a Visio diagram.
Right.
So you draw a flowchart in Visio and connect the dots. With Orchestrator, you draw a flowchart within Orchestrator and then through property pages, describe what you want it to do, and it'll produce the PowerShell, schedule it, and run it on the back end.
Right.
So it's again, everything bubbles down to PowerShell on the back end, and it's just different ways of making it easy to generate that code.
Mm-hmm. We have some examples here on the slide of some different modules, the new modules, some of the new modules that are out there, 16 new ones with regards to what's available. You can obviously go off and control things like the start screen, go off and do some stuff with Windows Search, do some stuff that happens to be working with DFSR for file services replication and also with Windows Defender and things like that. From a commandlets perspective, we got over 650-odd new ones as well. They go down even deeper into different things for being able to go off and to manage those with a commands perspective. And then overall, new parameters, over 3,600 new parameters that are in there as well. Make sure you memorize all of these because they're all in the test. let's switch gears out of PowerShell for a little bit because my brain's about to explode.
Well, before we do, one question that came up in the chat I want to call out. Show command. That's how to produce the graphical thing. Show command.
Right.
And if you open the integrated scripting environment, it's going to be there on the side.
On the right hand side. Unless you decide to hide it.
Everyone's noticed the start menu in server by now, I hope so.
Yeah. The one thing I also want to mention is the updatable help concept, right?
Updatable help, yeah. So the help is no longer part of PowerShell. The help is something you download off the web.
Right.
And
you receive regular updates for it as well.
Yeah, here's our top tip. Have web access when you want to download help. Because if you don't, it's going to say, I can't download the help. And all you're going to get is the syntax, which it reads from the files that are already there. You don't get all the text that says, here's what the parameters actually mean.
And if you actually go into get-help for the update help commands, commandlets, you'll be able to find out the ways you can go off and download those once and then be able to deploy them to other machines that don't have internet connectivity as well.
Yep, absolutely.
They go through and they talk about that. So with that, I'm just going to double-check anything quick in the PowerShell Q&A thing they have to worry about just yet. No, we'll come back to those. They're all good. So that brings us up into deployment options. What are your options for going off and deploying servers? So, obviously, first of all, when you go in and you get your ISO file and you choose the option of downloading the ISO file and you put that into your system, you happen to burn a DVD or burn it to a USB stick, as I normally do. You actually were talking about an interesting one of using getting the install.wim file and doing a WIM to VHD to be able to go off and to use that as your deployment.
Exactly right. And that's, again, just based on PowerShell.
Right.
There's a little PowerShell commandlet you can down. WIM2, WIM2 VHD. Just go, bingle it and you'll find it.
Nice. Deployment options. In case you haven't noticed yet, when you're doing next, continue for a traditional install, you're going to end up with the command prompt as your UI. The default install prompt for Server 2012 and 2012 R2 is
Server Core.
I just realized this is actually an old screenshot from this particular deck. It's actually showing us a 2012 install, not 2012 R2.
It hasn't changed.
It has not changed. It's basically the same.
Yeah.
So Server Core is the default deployment option. You'd be using, if you haven't already downloaded it, RSAT for remote server administration tools to do a management of a Server Core box. Anything you can do from a Windows 8.1 system to a Server 2012 R2 system can be done with the RSAT tools and vice versa. PowerShell is available against that guy as well, and also you're able to go in and add or remove different features and different functionality. You can also choose to install Server with a GUI if you wanted to, and you get the traditional environment that you're expecting to get.
You basically have now four levels of UI within a Windows Server.
Right.
And you can change between those four levels of UI at any time that you want. It will cost you a reboot. But that's basically all it is, right?
Right.
So you have four levels of UI. You have Server Core, which we've all seen. I've heard a lot, when Server Core first came out, there was a lot of people that said, that's great, and they installed it, and they went, this is awful, because
they couldn't manage stuff.
You couldn't manage anything, right, because the vendors that were building stuff didn't have any command line tools.
Right.
They go, I put Server Core on, I put a new HBA or NIC in, and it says, how do I set some property? Open the property page. There is none. I need a command line tool. We don't make one. So, and you're kind of shafted. So there's a lot of people that, put Server Core in and then kind of had to reinstall and go to full server. And that, reinstall to go to full server, horrible thing to have to do. So with 2012 R2, it's a reboot now.
Right.
So just have a look on my screen real quick, and I'll kind of show you what these are. And you'll get a sense of these three different
all
options.
Those servers that you're managing on the left-hand side over there, we don't know if they're Server Core or Server Full with a GUI. We have no idea. Until you go in and actually launch it.
Well, I do because I'm logged onto the desktop.
Well,
but
I'm just saying.
We don't need to know.
Right, we don't need to know, I guess, is a better way of explaining it.
So what I'm doing is I'm doing remove roles and features. This is a full server. This is what I call a level 3 UI, okay? Which means it has the entire Windows desktop, but it doesn't have the desktop experience, which is the bit that gives you all of, Here we go. Which is the bit that gives you all this stuff, right? The all this start menu and tiles and meeting and all that kind of stuff, right? If you're building a terminal server and you want to go out and give users, you know, a full Windows 8.1 desktop UI experience, you install the desktop experience and you get that. Servers come with what's called the user interfaces infrastructure, which is one of the features. So I drill down a little bit here, user interfaces and infrastructure, and you can see it's got basically four levels. We've got server, we've got desktop experience, which is level 4, which I don't have installed. Server graphical shell, which is what I do have installed, which is desktop and Internet Explorer, right, essentially.
And Star Tree.
Then we have graphical tools and infrastructure, which is what I'm going to drop to on this server.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see what that is after this guy does a reboot and I reconnect back into it via RDP. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to do that, hit next a few times. This thing's going to want to reboot, so we're going to pop back to this in just a little bit.
Yep. So in case you're, well, I would say switch the slides here for 1 second while waiting for that restart to take place. We've got the classic full server, as you're mentioning. We don't actually call out the fourth level, which is the desktop experience,
yeah,
because you typically wouldn't have that on a server.
Well,
ever.
You would only have that on a server if it's a terminal server that you're using as a
session-based
desktop.
Stuff, right, session desktop. There is the full server without graphical interface shell, which you're going down to. I call that core with training wheels. Because it has Server Manager in it, and it also has other functionality, and then down to pure server cores down at the bottom.
I call full server without a graphical shell the thing I install all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call it.
Nice, very nice. We do have a list of what is available in each of the different capabilities and what's there for both server core and all the rest of them, as you can see. And we're waiting for that reboot to come.
Oh, I haven't even started yet. Move on.
What?
We'll pop back to that. You got 5 minutes for this thing to reboot and post.
Oh, okay.
Kind of jazz, so
okay, well.
Yeah, you thought it was instantaneous.
I know. I was like, wait.
I'm doing it on hardware, so it's got to do all the server level
BIOS stuff.
That takes like 3 minutes.
So we talked about RSAT, remote server administration tools. One of the main things inside RSAT with our remote server administration tools is the use of a tool called Server Manager. And we'll talk about this now. We'll be able to show it both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Things. Server Manager is a tool that allows you to go off and to basically do anything you need to do to a box if you're physically signed onto the box with the console, or optimally, if you're at a client system that matches the same version as the server.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that, what I mean is Server 2012 R2, to manage it with RSAT, you have to go in and use 8.1 as your workstation to go off and to manage
it. It will go backwards.
With that combination,
yep,
it can down-level manage servers.
Correct.
But you have to have that combination to be able to load it and to run it.
Yep.
For 2012, you have to have version 8 of Windows.
Yep.
And that will also go in and manage downward as well.
Yep.
And is it available for Windows 7? No, it is not available for Windows 7.
You have
to have, we've always done this. We've always matched up the server version with the client version for the RSAT tools.
Yeah, there's
and we're now in alignment.
It's a version equivalency requirement.
Right. So in actual fact, 2012 is the first time we were able to get them almost at the same time SimShip, because it's not included with the main OS. You actually have to go in and do a separate download.
Mm-hmm.
2012 R2 was absolutely SimShip. I actually had the download link for the 8.1 tools before I could get access to the bits.
SimShip?
Simultaneous shipping for the server OS / client OS, and then the remote tools to be able to manage
this
it.
This is Microsoft jargon.
we'll have an anecdote for how they go off and name all these different
SimShip.
Things. SimShip. If you're using the Server Manager, you can go off and you can choose your different type of feature-based install, role or feature-based, to be able to go off and add different functionality to your servers. You can also choose to go off and to point it to an individual server. You can also go off and point it to a VHD file. And you can obviously go off and select different roles to be able to go off and to manage them. Select your features and then go ahead and confirm your selection and install. Pretty simple. At the bottom corner of that guy there, for instance, you have the ability to go off and take a look at the configuration settings. You can then go off and pipe through a PowerShell command to be able to make sure your servers are configured the same way if you wanted to.
One of the things down there, you notice this is export configuration settings. It actually
produces,
I think it's a MAF file.
Yeah.
I think it's a MAF format file. It's a file. It's not a PowerShell command, but it's a file that you can then feed
reference
into.
You feed into a PowerShell
and
command.
And you can actually
install a Windows feature.
You know, make it repeatable.
Right. And there's also, very importantly, a reference where the source could be found. Because if you decide to remove The S by X, the side by side, SWX, I believe it is. SWXS?
SXS.
XSS, folder structure.
Say that 10 times fast.
I'm not even going to try. that basically has the bits to be able to go off and to install the different pieces as you need to. If you go in and you add and remove different components, you can get rid of that and also save some disk space, but then you have to go and point to where to find those files from.
Absolutely.
And it can be a UNC share for where it happens to be. Anything else that we got in there?
So we can do a quick tour of Server Manager if you want.
Sure.
All right, so have a look down. So for those that haven't played with this, the UI hasn't really changed from 2012 to 2012R2, so this will be sort of brief, but this is Server Manager on a single server. A couple things to point out. The initial dashboard is just common tasks, but it produces what are called tiles. And the tiles make it glanceable, is a term that's often used, to see if things are healthy or not healthy. We're going to make this a little more elaborate in just 2 seconds. Local server is where you can come to do simple things like, you know, rename, enable nick teaming, enable firewalls. And it also shows things like local events, services, best practices, performance, and just kind of bubbles all that stuff up. Almost like a one quick view of all the simple things that are on the machine. And then it produces nodes based on services and roles it finds. So here's all the file server stuff that relate to this server, and here's all the web server stuff that relates to this server. So as you add more roles and features, this will get bigger. Now, what's even cooler about it is that it doesn't just do one server, it's multi-server. So we can come in here and add pretty much anything we want. These are all the servers that are in AD right now. So I'm going to add in my file clusters. I'm going to add in a couple of Hyper-V hosts. I'm going to add in my domain controller, this file server, and that's enough for now. So we'll add a bunch of servers in, and what you see this is going to do is go interrogate those servers via PowerShell, figure out what's on them, and you can see Server Manager begin to populate with different roles.
And so it's important to note here that by default, any 2012 or 2012R2 system brought into a domain has remote management turned on
by default,
able to be interrogated and worked with in this kind of fashion.
Yeah, absolutely.
As soon as it's domain joined, you have the proper credentials.
As soon as it's domain joined.
If you don't have the proper credentials, because it's a workgroup machine or someplace else, you can actually right mouse click on the server and choose manage as and put in credentials.
And so you can manage things that are not necessarily, you know, that you don't have a trust relationship with.
Right. You can even go in and add servers from hosting providers.
Absolutely.
As long as you have the proper ports open.
Absolutely. So here's here's the Active Directory components, the DHCP components, the remote desktop services components, which we'll be getting to next. And then you'll notice that as I add all those, my dashboard now kind of comes alive. And so I've got a manageability error on Hyper-V that has 4 events that I need to be concerned about. And so I've got 4 events, and I can kind of go take a look at these now and go, well, you know, do I care about them? Do I not care about them? I'm just going to say I don't care about these because I know what they are. And that makes that tile green again. And so, you know, one of the practices we have is, you know, all our 2012 servers, we have a view in Server Manager, and, you know, the guys that when they come on shift, the first thing they do is go, are all the tiles green? And if they're not, they got to go in and address all those warnings that bubble up as kind of a simple sort of health type check. And then as you go through the different roles, you can check the individual health. And this is kind of says, you know, it's all servers right here, for example, that are part of that role. So this is all servers that have file services installed, and then a view of all volumes across every single server that has file services installed. So it's really a one-to-many type view. And this is every disk across every server that's registered with Server Manager right now. So I got a quick glance of how my disk space is actually using. Here's every share across every server that Server Manager is configuring and seeing right now. And then the final thing I'll show you is that you can create on your dashboard additional server groups. So for example, under Manage, I can create a group. We'll call this one, say Core Services. Maybe this is going to be my domain controller and, you know, my file cluster. And so I'll take maybe my VMM server, and we'll just take one other server. We'll take my domain controller. And so now I've got a custom group, Core Servers, that bubbles the information together about just those two machines. And so it enables you to kind of carve up this view of your network through Server Manager, and have a real simple way to get there and manage and administer things. And then the final little bit is with any of these servers, you right-click and you get a bunch of tools that you can run. So there's a bunch of command line tools. For example, I want to run netdom.exe against my domain controller. And so the, here's the command, here's the help, I can now go run it. I want to, for example, on VMM, I want to RDP into it. So I can right-click, and I'd say not available. My domain controller, right-click, configure NIC teaming, remote desktop connection, and it'll just start an RDP session there. So it makes things extremely simple and extremely easy.
Couple of quick questions that have been coming in here about Server Manager with regards to being able to manage systems. Server Core versus 2012, again, no way of knowing when you're managing the system remotely if it's a Server Core install or a Server GUI install.
Well, you would have to look at the installed roles to figure that out.
Right. But you manage them the exact same way, yep. Basically. You add them all in. If they're a core install or if they're a full install, full GUI install, they look at the exact same inside the console.
So have a look down at the screen real quick. So my reboot's done from previously.
Right.
So this is the level 2, what I call it, which is server with a management interface.
Or I call it Server Core with training wheels.
Server Core with training wheels. And the cool thing about this is it looks like, you know, a Server Core, because you get all the benefits of Server Core, but I have full graphical capability. So I get Server Manager here, and you go, well, how do I get to my admin tools? You go Tools, and that's where it is. And this is how I deploy basically every server I run now, because mm-hmm. Server Manager is my central tool. I don't need a desktop.
Right.
The only thing you need a desktop for is file.
You don't log on to the core box to be able to launch this
in your
environment.
You don't need to, but if I need to log on interactively to do something,
right.
I've got enough graphical capability here that I can.
To be functional.
Yeah. For example, I can get into, under Server Manager, I can get into computer management, and from there into device manager to fix a misbehaving driver. And so that's where this functionality becomes really, really useful to me. So there's, you know, device manager on Server Core, essentially. So there you go.
A couple of quick questions that are up here as well. Someone's asking if, is there a definitive list of ports they'd be open to be able to give your hardware firewall team for servers that are remotely? Do you know them off the top of your head? If you don't,
no.
I have a blog post about it.
I don't know. Use your blog post.
I've got a blog post on regularitguy.com that lists off the ports that are available that need to be open to be able to do this remotely. You have to cite credentials to be able to identify the guy on the other side. It's in there. How do you go off and manage down-level servers with Server Core? We don't have any down-level servers in our demo environment.
No.
But how would you do that?
With Server Core?
With Server Manager.
Well, you just point it at the server, assuming the ports are open. It's not going to be able to do all the same stuff.
No, down-level servers. 2008, 2008 R2, and 2012, 2012 R2?
I don't know. I sense a trick question.
I can tell you that.
I'm hesitant to answer all of a sudden.
For Server 2012, nothing. You simply point to it and it works. Server 2012 R2, it also works. If you want to go down to 2008 and 2008 R2, you have to install WMF version 3.0 currently. That's the version you can download. That's final and release. That basically will give you the PowerShell capabilities and remote management capabilities. And you also have to make sure that WinRRM is enabled. And you also have to install .NET Framework 3.51 or 4 backwards compatible versions on there as well. On the WMF 3.0 download file, there is a big list of gotchas. Be very careful. Don't install this on down-level servers if you're also running the following things. Make sure you're not running those following things, because that version of PowerShell will overwrite the version that's on there, and it will basically cause things to go awry.
Okay.
So be careful with it.
I wasn't going anywhere near that detail, but that's an exceptionally good answer.
You got it, because I get asked that question all the time.
And you wrote a blog post on it, right?
Right. 2003, you cannot manage 2003 boxes with Server Manager. You'd have to still use the old traditional ways of doing stuff.
But if you've got Server 2003... upgrade.
Yeah. Devin's asking me for a link to the blog post. I'll try my best to be able to find something to break and put it up. I don't have it right off the top of my head. Just go to the website and start scrolling through it. You'll see it.
Regular IT guy.
Regular IT guy.
There's nothing regular about you, Rick.
Hey, man, I'm just a regular IT guy. That's all. Deployment options. You showed me deploying different functionality and management of servers with Server Manage, that sort of stuff. You also are able to go off and obviously deploy servers using the Windows Deployment Services, or WDS, if you wanted to, for doing Pixie Boots, being able to make your own custom images. That's also obviously a thing that's an option. This is what the main thing I wanted to get to make sure we cover off, if possible, in good enough detail that we can explain this concept. Okay. The desired state configuration. The idea of having components of your data center having the exact correct configuration, and when they fall out of compliance, and I'm doing air quotes, but you can't see me, they're able to be returned back to that desired.
I'm doing air guitar. You can't see me either.
That's true, eh? PowerShell language extensions providers enable declarative and repeatable deployment. We actually were using this in the keynote demos to be able to make sure that the keynote machines for TechEd were done correctly and then reconfigured back again the same way as a reset, if you will. Talk to me a bit about this.
Sure. Take a look on the screen. I'm going to kind of walk through this this little demo environment I've got here to kind of sort of illustrate the point of this. Now, this is a really, really simple example. But you can see from this simple example where the power of this actually comes from. So the question that comes up is, how can I use PowerShell or anything for that matter to ensure that a server is in a particular configuration? And you can always do this with PowerShell. You could have always done this with PowerShell. Mm-hmm. You just had to write a lot of logic. You know, I want to make sure I got a web server. Is the web server installed? If it's not, install it. If it is, move on, check the next thing. And so there is this logic you would have to build into a configuration script or some sort of configuration entity that would do all of that. Mm-hmm. What desired state configuration does is says, you don't worry about how it gets done. You just state what you want, right? So I want a web server to have this type of a configuration. And I don't have to write any logic to determine what it is, what is necessary to get it there, or to get it there. The desired state configuration components do all of that. And there's an entire, you know, back-end sort of logic structure to this where you can write providers, you can extend them, and you can get very, very, you know, in-depth and very detailed with it. And there's some simple ones that are included with PowerShell, and this is a framework that's going to grow and grow and grow and grow over time.
We're basically making it so that we have a desired configuration state agent, if you will, that's able to go off and to consume not just PowerShell, but any standards-based management configuration to be able to be applied to that endpoint.
So what I've got here is, in this example, is I've got a simple configuration definition for a computer called Server 1 named IIS website, and it has two requirements. It has a requirement for the Windows feature IIS that it be present, and a requirement for the Windows feature ASP.NET that it be present. And I've actually got an error in there I need to correct real quick. The component name that I'm actually looking for is WebASP.NET 4.5. So let me fix that. So this is the ASP.NET component for the web server. And this is a declarative language that has very specific statements that you put in there. So it's you need to learn kind of with the providers for desired state configuration what the statements are and the capabilities are. And it's dependent on, you know, what the backend provider that's using it is. So at the end of the day, I have this configuration that I'm going to define. And then that configuration, which is structured like a PowerShell function, produces what's called a MAF file, which is essentially a description of the configuration for that server. Mm-hmm. So this file right here is just a standard, let me notepad it. Right, is a standard MAF definition of what that configuration should actually be. And we don't need to read this or look at it, right? This is just what it generates. And this is an industry standard generation that, you know, not just PowerShell, but potentially other tools and providers and ISVs could produce things to generate this. Once that's created, we can then apply that configuration. So I have a server here, server one, I'm going to apply this configuration to. So I need to log onto the server. And then I'm just going to go in here first and verify that I can connect to the server, that I'm actually able to log onto it. And then we'll check the status of the web server components on that. So I'm logged onto that server, run a simple command here to see if there's web server components installed. Slide this up a notch. And so this is running. You can see that I've got a bunch of web stuff, but there's nothing actually installed right now. It's all available. Mm-hmm. And so what I've said is I've got a desired state configuration that requires we have a couple of those components actually be installed. And so we're going to run this new command called start DS configuration, and we're going to send that configuration over to server one. And so the path is the folder that contains the MAF file.
Right.
And away we go. So we'll run that command. And you can see what this is doing down here is it's going through that MAF file, examining the server, and then making the changes to it. You can see this in the sort of, you know, detailed output that's going to come up. Yes. I've turned on,
verbose.
Highly verbose. So this is everything.
Right.
So you can kind of read this a little bit as it happens. And you can see it running tests. And I'll kind of scroll up and show you a few little things here in just a second. You can kind of see what it's doing. So we'll just let it run. It's only going to take it about 30 seconds total to run. Now applying the configuration. And so that's going to do the install of IIS. And the install of IIS takes about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Installation started, checking prerequisites. And you can kind of see from some of these scripts right here, you know, importing module Windows feature, enabling running the add Windows feature module to install IIS, running the installation, doing the prerequisites. And so this is, you know, recognize that that server doesn't meet the stated configuration.
Right.
And it knows how to put it in the stated configuration. It knows how to do all that testing, do all the logic, and just at the end of the day, produce it. And it could be a configuration that's greater than what it is now, or maybe the server has too much configuration, we've got to bring it down a notch. The important thing to know about desired state is it's something that, you know, you write the definition of the state, and it takes care of either removing things or adding things. And, you know, depending on the providers and the way it's set up, you could do things like add files. You can go very detailed to, like, in the case of IIS, setting default ports on websites. So once you define that perfect configuration, you don't got to worry, and changes happen, you don't got to worry about what the change was or getting it back. You just say, here's what I want, make it so. Here's what I want, do it. Here's what I want, configure it. And it works out all the details around it. So that's kind of the overview of DSC. We'll let this run. It's taking a little longer than I thought it was going to take, so I'm running out of words.
No problem. It's kind of, like I said, there's kind of like the authoring phase that goes through when you decide what you're going to do. There's the actual refinement, and then there's the make it so. I like that, the make it so phase at the end, to be able to go off and make it. We're actually, I think, we've covered all the stuff with Server Manager. We've covered the questions that we've got in the queue about different sort of stuff. A couple of little quick questions there that came up. You know, can you get the GUI interface on a server Hyper-V install of Hyper-V Server 2012, 2012 R2? The answer is no. But you can manage it remotely with RSAT tools if you're part of the same domain for the way you go off and manage it. Someone's gone ahead and put up the link to what that article was for the ports required to access them remotely. So they actually went to my blog and found out what the ports were, because I don't know them off the top of my head. That's why I write a blog, so I can remember what they are. Someone's asking about the ability to go off and they get desired state configuration into SCCM, System Center Configuration Manager. It's not in there by default. It's not in that particular iteration, but the foundation's there, and it's automation of a script.
And
right?
System Center Configuration Manager already has a configuration. I forget actually what it's called. It's been a while since I've used it, but there's it's not desired state configuration based on PowerShell, but they have a tool in there where you can say, you know, here's a set of configurations I want to have on a system.
Right.
And it'll go in and make them, and it'll make them on a regular basis, much like group policy kind of does. Because, you know, if you think about it, you know, group policy is a form of desired state configuration. Group policy preferences are a form of desired state configuration. This is the next generation of this that's much more powerful, that's based on industry standards, that's cross-platform, that doesn't require domains. These machines are in work groups. So very, very good. If you jump back down to the screen here, that's finished now. So you can see all the, you know, little sort of installation started bits. And these are all the very detailed steps that were done to make that machine compliant.
Right.
And if I now go back and look at it, so we'll go jump into that server again, and then just have a look at the status of all the web server components. And you can see that now I've got a bunch of them that are installed right here, for example, a bunch of them that are installed right there. And that's what the desired state configuration did, made the determination that the desired state and the actual state are different and made them match.
Right. Going to do a call out one more time to the jumpstart that's coming up on July the 18th with Jeffrey Snover and also with Jason Hemlick, which is at microsoftvirtualacademy.com/liveevents/powershell/jumpstart is the URL to register for that one there. It'll be available on demand after the fact. You'll be able to go off and take a look at it after the fact. With that, my friend, I think we're out of time. I've got a little bit of a summary just to say what's new with server management automation here in the slides in case you wanted to flip to that for just 1 second. Standards-based, we started off with that entire section at the very beginning, the whole concept of open management infrastructure, OMI, being able to go off and to do this, and then being able to go off and have a broader adoption of WS MAN across the board.
I see something we forgot.
What was that?
Essentials.
It wasn't, oh, yes. Do we have time?
We got 30 seconds.
Okay, so good point. I thought we got that one. I don't have a slide on it, though, man.
You don't need one. Have a look down here for a second.
Yeah, okay. So it's
If you,
it's called the Essentials Experience.
Yeah. So for those of you that had Windows, you know what we used to be Windows Server Essentials, like this, and, you know, Small Business Server evolved into Essentials. Where'd all that go? It's now just a role. So when you buy Windows Server, be it Standard or Data Center, and you want to go add some stuff to it, so we're going to just go in here into Server Manager real quick.
You went the wrong way.
I went the wrong
That's
way.
That's the way you want
That's
to go.
That's the way I want to go. And we come down here under Features. There is a feature now called Windows. Where did it go?
I thought it was a role, dude.
Oh, maybe it is a role, sorry. Yeah, it is a role. Windows Server Essentials Experience.
Don't freak me out. It's a role.
And what this will do is add a bunch of stuff to the machine, including all that super easy Small Business Server-ish stuff that you used to have with Windows Server Essentials. Mm-hmm. It's just a role you add, and you have a Windows Server Essentials machine. You add this reboot, and it goes, hey, you've got a Windows Server Essentials box. What do you want to call your domain? And then sets everything up for you.
Right. So this way here is what you would use if you already have a domain in place. You simply want to have the experience of it. It gives you a new shell to be able to go off and to manage it, yep, and the experience of what it looks like. Licensing-wise, you have to already have been licensed. It doesn't switch your licensing model. You have to already have been licensed for your client cals, yep, if you decide to add this in. But this also gives it a way of being able to switch from one mode into the other mode. It's in there. There's a good blog post about it that I'll have a link to at the end to make sure that I cover that one off. But it's basically easy to be able to get into it and take a look at it. It gives you the remote web workplace, gives the ability to have a different management interface than you would expect from a server manager install to be able to do stuff. With that, my friend, I do believe we have to wrap this one up because the timer is about to start flashing at me to say that we got to close this one off. We'll be back in 10 minutes' time if you're on the live stream. Otherwise, just hit next on the play button and hit the next session. We'll be talking about VDI.
VDI.
And VDI stuff's coming up. Thanks a lot for joining, and we'll be back very soon.